and Kenosha. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, The Morning Show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Friday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I could not be more excited about today's program. I think it's going to be a terrific way to finish out what's been a really strong week of interesting morning show interviews, one after another. I am really excited today to be sitting opposite Nick Dembski. He is with the Racine Public Library. He's been there for some time, and actually most recently serving as its interim director. And within the next few days, there very likely will be an announcement about Nick Dembski's ongoing status with the Racine Public Library. It's a place that means a lot to him. Nick has given heart and soul to the Racine Public Library, and it is an exciting time for the library. If you haven't been there recently, perhaps you've missed the splendid renovation, which began in the spring of 2022 and finished out in the spring of last year. And it is absolutely amazing all that one finds at the Racine Public Library. And, of course, that's often the case with many public libraries if they have the resources. Libraries have been, in a sense, reimagining themselves and their mission over the last few years. What a public library is in the 21st century is really dramatically different from what I remember from the public library of decades ago, long before Nick was even born. Anyway, there are all kinds of really exciting things for us to be talking about today. And Nick Dembski, we welcome you back to the morning show.
That was such a glowing introduction, Greg, that I kind of just want to be quiet and like have you talk for the next half hour.
I don't think anybody is interested in that, but thank you for the compliment.
Absolutely. And thanks for having me.
You bet. Good to have you here. It's been a while since you've been on the program, and I think the last time you were here was talking about a really fun performance series in downtown Racine called Bonk. And I was trying to remember if Bonk was under the auspices of the library, or is that another thing?
That's a great question. It was its own separate thing. However, Bonk, and for anyone listening who doesn't know what Bonk was basically a poetry and music performance series that had mainly one event a month, and we got to bring in tons of performers over the series went for 15 years, and I was the director of it for 12 years. But we got to bring in national poetry series winners, national Grand Slam champions, national Book Award winners, a number of different folks that you wouldn't imagine, Pulitzer Prize winners. You wouldn't imagine these folks like showing up at a small series in Racine. the library was absolutely essential to the existence of Bonk. Bonk, it was his own independent thing, but it had a few different sponsors, and the library, as well as the Friends of the Library, were two like really critical pillars to keeping it going as long as it went.
Right. Very good. Before we talk about the Racine Public Library, I think it would be good for people to get to know who Nick Dembski was before you ever set foot in the Racine Public Library.
Sure,
so,
sure.
So tell our listeners, and I'm not sure I know the answer to most of these questions, but tell our listeners about where you're from originally. I know that you were a student at Carthage, but I don't know a whole lot more about the early life of Nick Dembski.
Yeah. Well, you and I do go back prior to WGTD, right? I got to know you at Carthage College. I grew up primarily in Northwest Indiana, in a little suburb called Griffith, really close to Gary. Mm. And my folks were divorced, so I lived on the weekends in Chicago and different parts of the city as my dad moved around. Then he moved to Michigan, so got a little familiar with parts of that. And I did come out to this area. Long story short, I was really not interested in going to college. Like you know, you could pry it from my cold dead hands or whatever, you know. But my mother, who passed away in 2007, I'm incredibly grateful that she had different vision for me around that. And she dragged me kicking and screaming to all sorts of different college visits. And one of them was at Carthage. And there was, what I was at the time, what I was interested in was writing, specifically writing poetry, but all sorts of writing. I read a lot of sort of like, you know, outlaw, weirdo writers at the time. And Carthage, as you know, has a tuition scholarship. At the time, it was called the Rude Scholarship.
Yeah, right.
And I, you know, so my mother dragged me to this and said, you have to do this. Okay, so there was a prompt, and I wrote an essay, and I had nothing to lose because I didn't want to go. So it was a very flippant essay. The last sentence I remember did have the F word in it.
Oh, boy.
but long story short, the school offered me a scholarship because of that. And that is, you know, I had no other plans, right?
Yeah.
So this was great news. My mother, of course, was thrilled. It took me here to Carthage. And that's how I got to this area anyways. I'd love to tell you the story of how I first came to the library.
Yeah, please.
Yeah. So it was right at the other end of that. I've graduated Carthage. A lot of y'all there had tremendous influence on me. One of the people, Chris Grugel, who was a librarian, still a librarian at Carthage, a real mentor to me. He not only, you know, influenced me around libraries, but he taught me how to rock climb, which is like one of the biggest passions in my life.
Huh.
And when I was leaving Carthage, he said, you know, I said, I don't know what to do after this. And he said, I would go to this place called the National Outdoor Leadership School and spend 3 months in the Rocky Mountain Wilderness. So that's what I did. But I like, you know, I lost my apartment to do that. I sold my car. I like cleaned out my bank account. When I came home, I was living in my girlfriend's mother's basement, jobless, carless. I'm taking the bus. This is in Racine. I'm taking the bus around Racine every day in the winter to just ask around, get paper applications. That was the time of paper applications.
Sure.
And explore what job opportunities were there. Well, there's only one free place in any community where you can go and fill out these paper applications, right? And it's the public library.
Right. It's probably warm.
It was warm.
And well-lit.
Yeah. So eventually, some really kind, compassionate, insightful employee at that library who just greeted me every day when I'm coming in said, hey, are you looking for a job? I said, yeah. And they said, well, just so you know, we're hiring. And they pulled out a paper application and handed it to me, right? And so I always say that I am a living, breathing library success story. I got a job for, you know, $9.50 an hour shelving books 17 and a half years ago. And now I've gotten to be the interim director here. I mean, I've, you know, worked like six other jobs in the meantime at the library. But it's been a huge honor to get to be with the Racine Public Library. And it's been the foundation for my whole life, really.
Wow. That is a great story.
Yeah.
I'm curious, as someone who loved to write, and so I'm assuming loved to read, although those aren't always exactly in sync, but often there's a corollary. Were you somebody who lived a lot in the library growing up, or is your love affair with libraries something that sort of gestated later?
That's a great question. And I think you get, you know, to your point, kind of, you do get different answers from different people. Not everyone, a lot of people, when you say, I work at the library, they go, oh, you get to read books all day. And it's like, well, no, that's not at all what we do. And some people who work in libraries do it for very different reasons than they, like, love classic literature or whatever. I do happen to love classic literature. And my relationship with libraries, I was fortunate in that I had a family and parents who introduced us to libraries and valued libraries very early on. So I remember taking out, you know, checking out at the time they would have been cassette tapes, like children's books, along with the audio to them. I remember Dr. DeSoto. I don't know if you've ever read that children's book. Oh, it's just about like a mouse who's a dentist who has to work on a fox, I think, and get in his mouth, you know. But these were are opportunities. Of course, you're getting literate, you're learning all of that, but you're also having positive experiences with people you love. And that's really, in sort of the research around literacy and libraries, coming out more and more as this is really critical. When we do, I really love story time. Some of my history is as actually the only full-time male children's librarian we've had in 127 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And I love kids are just some of my favorite people in the world. But with story time, a lot of adults will say like, oh no, my kid just runs around or like he's a little loud, he can't pay attention, he fidgets. And we're like, that doesn't matter. Just come and be here. If he likes running around the library, let him run around the library. Just give him a good, you know, let him have a positive experience of being here. And the research shows that if you facilitate that, then literacy just sort of comes organically afterwards.
Wow. For those of you just joining us, I am speaking today with Nick Dembski with the Racine Public Library. And for those of you who have maybe not ever been there or not been there in quite some time, the Racine Public Library is located right downtown at 7th Street, and they underwent recently a massive renovation, one of the only comprehensive renovations that have occurred at the library in quite some time, and the results have been incredibly spectacular. One of the things I want to make sure before we talk about the facility right downtown is the fact that the Racine Public Library, like a lot of public libraries, also has a bookmobile. And I saw on the website mention of a couple of book bikes well. Man. Now, that I don't know anything about, and I don't think I've ever even laid eyes on the Racine Public Library book bikes. So I'd really like to have you just say a word about both of those things, the nature and purpose of a bookmobile, and then what these book bikes are. I imagine they are some kind of augmentation of that central mission.
I will start by saying the sort of fleet of outreach vehicles that we have, right? That's maybe a grand word for it, but we refer to as the Library Go vehicles that we have. And there's actually one more kind of big one that you might have not caught when you were looking at things, but we have something called the Techmobile.
I did see
you
that.
The Techmobile is pretty cool, and you know, not like we're the only folks who have ever done anything like that, but pretty unique to us. Not a lot of libraries have that. So Bookmobile, as you said, very beloved. The people who come to the Bookmobile swear by the Bookmobile and are very loyal to it and will lay their lives down for it. And if it's late, they'll call us and go, what the heck's going on? Is everything okay? You know. So we love the Bookmobile, and our team that runs it just does tremendous, excellent outreach. And I'll maybe just say, you know, this is an accessibility issue also. Different, you know, the Kenosha system here has something like four branches, five if you
right.
include the county.
Mm-hmm.
Racine only has one main library, and we have we don't just serve the city; we serve the county of Racine all the way up to Highway 94.
Mm.
So that's a service population of about 137,000 people, and one main library simply isn't appropriate. That community deserves more, but there are difficult things to navigate, funding being the main one to
sure.
establish that. So the bookmobile serves a very important accessibility focus in that way. To just take a moment to talk about the techmobile, it's a really remarkable feature. And I'll say the techmobile and these book bikes, it was one thing for us with the renovation that we did and with some of these newer things that we've bought. It was one thing for us to acquire them, and then it was another thing for us to figure out, how do we staff this? What do we do with this, right?
Yeah.
And fortunately, with the Techmobile, we've really got a team who's very passionate about getting it out into the community, and they're doing some great things. We have a team of young people who are just infinitely smarter than I am at technology things.
Yeah.
And so we, they're gearing up to do like a STEAM camp over 3 days this summer. They do Girls Who Code programs, all sorts of incredible things. But the Techmobile, just so listeners know, is in the community Tuesdays and Thursdays through Thursday, October 2nd. I'm sorry, August 22nd. I don't know why October 2nd came out. And it shows up. We have it just stationed at different places. One of them is the beach in Racine, by the Kids Cove area. Long story short, Greg, with the Techmobile, as you know, a strength of the Racine community, it's one of the most diverse communities in the state of Wisconsin. That's true racially and ethnically. It's true in a number of ways, but it's true economically too. And there's a ton of young people and adults who would just never get exposed to certain technologies that are more and more common now if an institution like the public library wasn't making those opportunities available. So Kids Cove is a great place to introduce folks to that.
So the Techmobile is kind of like this portable laboratory where students, young people can kind of experience things and see things.
Young and old alike.
Okay.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. We, so in-house, I think it's maybe worth mentioning, we have a number of new spaces from the renovation. One of them is called the Innovation Lab.
Yeah.
In the Innovation Lab, we have all sorts of different technology. There's VR goggles. There are a lot of different coding games that I know very little about, right? Mm. But that I see young people teaching very young people how to use so that they can maybe have those skills when they enter into the workforce and 10 or 15 years.
Wow.
But we also have multiple 3D printers. And so sometimes the Techmobile will even take out one of those 3D printers and show people in the community how it works, how to use that. Anybody in the community can come and get certain things. You can only get so many a month, then you got to start paying for them, but get things printed from our 3D printers. And as you and I were mentioning before we got on the air, the Innovation Lab also has a sound studio in it. We can talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah.
But the last thing I'll say about the Library Go fleet, you mentioned the book bikes, and you said you haven't seen them. That's because we're still working, frankly.
Oh.
We've brought them out into the community, for different events. But what it is a bike with sort of a trunk on the back of it. You fill it up with books, you ride it to wherever, and people can check it out. Usually, the library offers many more items than just books. Usually that's what we're loading it with, though. So for the most part, what we've done is just bring that to like special events that are happening in the community. It's not quite up to Bookmobile or Techmobile standards where we have a regular routine where we're like taking them, but hope to work towards that one day.
And is it sort of like a Bookmobile in miniature where somebody could potentially check out a book that's in that little trunk?
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. And I'll just say quickly, the broader context for all of this is, you know, throughout history and all around the globe, information and resources have gotten to communities and different parts of communities through incredibly ingenious ways, you know. And if you look into this, you'll see these like what we would call bookmobiles basically, but wouldn't necessarily be called this, but like on camelback or on horseback or, you know, whatever the case may be. There's all sorts of creative incidents of that. And so we're, you know, sometimes just nodding to that and having an innovative way to bring resources to people makes people want to engage in the resources differently.
Absolutely. So, by the way, just to return to the good old Bookmobile for one more second.
Yeah.
So what exactly is aboard the Bookmobile? Is it just kind of a general sampling of the huge collection of the library, or is it more things that are handpicked that you really think people might be interested in, or is it, do people like request things and reserve things and it gets stacked with that? I mean, what exactly is on board?
Yeah, that's a great question. Maybe it can fall under the umbrella of what is actually in a library nowadays too.
Yeah, right.
you gave such an excellent introduction in just saying like libraries are not only dramatically different from when you were a kid, from when I was a kid. I'm, you know, just creeping up on 41. But from 5 or 10 years ago, you know, libraries are changing radically all the time because our world and society is changing all the time. When the pandemic hit, libraries had to you used this word, which I love. We had to reimagine ourselves, right? And we're constantly doing that based off what the community's needs are. So anyways, some of the resources that exist in libraries are very surprising to people now. A sound recording studio would be one of them. But there's much smaller things. We have an entire collection called the Beyond Books Collection. And there's different segments of it, but some of it is like large yard games that people can, you know, if you want to play ladder ball, but you don't want to buy a ladder ball set because it's just going to be for one picnic and
year,
then you can do that. And we have a ton of different indoor and outdoor games. We have different technology. So some of it, you know, we have things like laptops, things like Wi-Fi hotspots, but then other, you know, more unusual technology that again, people might only need to use for some short period and don't want to make the expensive ticket.
Sure. And I know that you've had that for a while, the Beyond Books collection, but I think part of the renovation was really making that look sharp. In fact, I think on the website, the term utilizes boutique, the Beyond Books boutique or something like that. I mean, and really it's the way things are sort of displayed is just really classy.
Yeah. You may be conflating that with actually a different resource in the library. Not sure. But there is, so as I mentioned, we sort of have a few sister organizations. One of them is the Friends of the Racine Public Library. And they pretty much just exist to help raise money to support programming of the library. They're awesome. They're these radical, wild, you know, community members, many of them older and retired, but just really believe in literacy and its power. And they want to see the community have a thriving library. Part of the way that they raise funds is they take book donations every single day.
Oh, and then sell them.
Yeah. And so
I've seen that. I've bought things, actually. So,
Thank you.
I think I am conflating here a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. So one of the last pieces of the renovation, we expanded their space and have what's called now the Booktique, the Friends of the Library Booktique.
Okay.
That's and so it's just like a almost like a used bookstore that anyone can come to. I just bought a great book there about, I don't know if you would know this name, but a former labor worker, a black labor worker in Racine history named Blue Jenkins.
Oh, yeah.
You know Blue?
Yes.
I just learned about his legacy now.
Wow.
Thanks to the Friends of the Library.
Very good. For those of you just joining us, we're talking with Nick Dembski from the Racine Public Library and talking right now about some of the amazing things that are now available at the Racine Public Library since the completion of their wonderful renovation, which finished up in the spring of 2023. We've mentioned already the Innovation Lab. I don't think we've yet mentioned a space in the library which is called Teen Scene.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's something that a lot of libraries have recognized. Well, one is teens are kind of the hardest folks to keep engaged in libraries, right? We often get them while they're young. Maybe we'll get them when they're older, especially if they have kids again because they want to bring those young kids back in. But those preteen and teen years, it's really hard for libraries to keep those community members engaged. And what a lot of libraries have found is if they have their own space, that can really help change the dynamics. So long story short, you know, it's a space where we have video game systems set up, where we have laptops for kids to do homework or just, you know, explore the internet or whatever the case may be. But then we have a lot of, you know, books and just places to hang out, places to relax. And we've found that young patrons really are often just looking for a place to not feel judged and not feel, you know, policed or administered. And the Teen Scene has done a little bit of that for us.
Love that. You also have something called the History Room. And I think most people have not been in a library that has a history room, or they don't realize it, or it's not called the history room. But this is actually something that harkens back to something that I vividly remember in terms of some of the resources that certain people might really be anxious to access at a place like the Racine Public Library.
Yeah. Yeah, our local history room did also get a facelift in the renovation. And long story short, I think we do end up getting a lot of people, fortunately, who come to us who are really passionate about local history. I think there's, in general, just a lot of people who would love to know more about their community's history, but either don't have the time or don't know where to go to do it, right? So we love being at least one of the shops that can really offer a lot with that. And we've had a lot of partners in the community who have helped us make a more robust collection. And just one shout out that I'll give. I mean, generally, let me just say, the Racine Public Library has an incredible staff, like an awesome team doing not just incredible things in the community, but radical things in terms of the field. Like, we're getting to lead field-wide on some issues. But to highlight just one person, Rebecca Liana, who is now our head of the Adult Services Department. She was the local history librarian prior to that. Has a ton of expertise and connection. And so, you know, if you ask me, like, what's the most important resource that the library has, I'll always say the people. And I don't just mean the staff. I mean, you too, Greg. If you're in the building and someone has a question about WGTD, I'm going to say, you really should talk to this guy, right?
Right.
So, yeah, the local history room, just a tremendous resource. And if people are curious about what exists in there, one, they can, of course, come in. But two, there's a database that Rebecca and some others have really worked to curate that you can look at on our online resource.
Very good. I think something else that I really like about this new setup is that when you go to a typical college library, one thing you almost always see are study rooms. I mean, places yep. in which you can go. And I think at least for a long, long time, the typical public library had very little, if any, of that sort of thing. I don't just mean Racine, but any public library. And that seems to be like a really strong feature now, and maybe even more of those kind of gathering spaces than there used to be.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll wax poetic on that for a second. So, you know, talking about local history, I think I'm one of those people who's very passionate about it, right? And I think the more we know about our history, the better we can make our future, probably. And right now, even while the library is trying to continue to reimagine itself and, you know, pave a good path for our future, we're finding out as a leadership team that we're having to dig into our history more and more in ways we really didn't anticipate. So anyways, I say that to say when the Racine Public Library was first founded in 1897, the mayor at the time, Peter B. Nelson, in his, you know, speech and proclamation about it said, you know, here is now the university of the city of Racine.
Huh?
And that's still true today, most definitely. Like, the library still acts as, you know, an institutional pillar of education in the community. What a lot of people back then wouldn't have imagined about libraries, though, is now it's also the living room of the community, right? Mm. It's not just a repository for information. You know, we don't treat it as an academic library, and frankly, academic libraries aren't even treated only in that way either now. But it's treated as a community gathering space. And the last thing I'll say about that is, you know, just as was true for me as a 23-year-old guy with no car and no bank account, just trying to find a warm place to fill out job applications, it's an intersectional space of the community to a radical degree that incredibly very few other spaces in the United States of America can accommodate.
Mm. Very well put. For those of you just joining us, I'm talking with Nick Dembski about the Racine Public Library and all that is offered there, and particularly in the wake of their beautiful and extensive renovation, which was completed in the spring of 2023. I'm just curious, what was it like to work at the library and function at the library during that year-long renovation process? And of course, the renovation process, of course, involved a whole lot of planning and so on. But I mean, particularly in that period of construction, what was it like to work there and be there?
I appreciate that question. I'll start by saying I thought it would be worse than it was.
Hmm.
You know, something when I'm praising the team, I think something to highlight in that is this team at the Racine Public Library has gone through a lot of dramatic things, like one after the other after another. We had two director transitions in the last 3 to 4 years. But our second to most recent director, Jessica McPhail, she announced her resignation on a Friday morning. She'd been there 20 years, had a real legacy there. And by Friday afternoon, the whole state of Wisconsin was shut down for a pandemic, right?
Mm.
And our library didn't open back up really fully for a whole year. So that's just one of the big transitions that this library team had to navigate. Then when we do open up, and I think this is phenomenal, the director at that time and the other leadership steered us into this renovation that has produced amazing results, amazing outcome. For listeners who haven't been there, it is a beautiful library And, you know, even if the building weren't as great as it is, we are right on the shores of Lake Michigan. We have, like, the best view in Racine.
It's so, true.
Yeah, please come through. So to answer your question, what was it like to work there? It was ridiculous because, you know, someone would be trying to maybe answer a question on a phone and like someone else is like jackhammering 10 feet away
yeah,
from
right.
there. And I really thought, well, this is going to be really difficult. The staff's going to be upset. The community's going to be upset. And what I was so pleasantly surprised by was everyone believed so much that it was for a good reason, and they had faith in this vision and this outcome, that I don't feel like I had to. You know, I was constantly apologizing, and they were just like, you don't have to. They were so merciful and gracious. So thank you to the Racine community for that.
Well, it certainly is worth it because everything looks so beautiful. During that time of the pandemic, and I'm glad you mentioned that because I was thinking that would be an interesting thing to just talk about for a couple of minutes. So I suspect there was a time when, for all intents and purposes, the doors were locked and yep. nothing was happening.
Yep.
When you were able to begin functioning again, but without your doors open to the public, I imagine that's when you had to radically rethink how to continue to serve the public if it wasn't safe for them to come within the four walls of the library.
Definitely.
So explain what was developed.
Yeah, well, even before, I mean, you know, it's almost hard, I think, to remember sort of the height of COVID for a lot of us.
Doesn't it seem like it was a long time ago?
Well, and it just, if you remember, it just changed every day. There was just so much confusion and ambiguity, and we just didn't know what we didn't know, you know? So before we as a staff were even back in the building, we changed our service model so that, again, if the most important resource is the people who can help you navigate information, help you find answers to questions that you're looking for, then we were all just working from home, and we set up a phone system triage basically to where we were all able to answer emails and answer phone calls to patrons who still had questions. And, you know, people still had to deal with real hard life stuff during the pandemic that had nothing to do with the pandemic. So people were incredibly grateful for that. Then once we were able to get back in the building, something that happened at most libraries was we created curbside service. So now we're able to at least get some of our physical resources to people, even though they're not able to come back into the building. Little by little, we kept adding new things. One big thing, you know, in the Racine community, lots of people don't have internet access still, right? Don't have, if they do have the resources to access it, they might not have the know-how to access certain things. That's a ton of what we do at the Racine Public Library every day. So once we're at least, again, able to have a like small farm of computers to host people up at, that was really beneficial too. But it was a real slow, step-by-step, cautious program. And when, just like with every other organization at the time, you know, you'd build and you're going in the right direction, and then like one person gets COVID and then like your whole staff is gone for a week. So you figure out, all right, what do we do for this week? So glad to not be in the throes of that anymore.
Yeah, that was not fun. So home delivery is still something that the Racine Public Library offers, and is home delivery something that predates COVID, or is that one of those innovations that you had to develop?
Thank you so much for bringing that up, because that really, I guess, is part of the Library Go structure that I just blanked on. And it's really important. Frankly, just an amazing resource. It does predate COVID. anybody can use our home delivery service, first of all. So you don't need to, you know, prove that you can't leave your home or whatever. You don't need to prove anything. You just need to say, I want you to come to my house and bring the library resources here. And we will. And again, you know, one of the core values of libraries is accessibility. Mm. We try to remove as many barriers to accessibility as possible, and we try to create new pathways. And this is, for a lot of people, Greg, in the community, this service is a lifeline. You know, and I've heard people say as much to me. A lot of elders in our community really have much broader worlds because of this home delivery service. And so, again, just really grateful to the staff members who keep that going so well.
Mm. So in terms of the stuff that that the library offers, of course, it's a whole lot of things besides books,
right?
But in many respects, books remain kind of the headline item. It's often what we still think of most immediately in terms of the library. It's the place that has all of these incredible books. One of the things we hear about more and more is in certain places, in certain libraries, where certain people have certain ideas about certain books that maybe should not be on the shelf after all. And I'm just wondering, how often does that happen, for instance, at the Racine Public Library, where somebody essentially thinks book X should not be on this shelf? This does not belong in a public library or this public library. I mean, I think there are certain maybe parts of the country where that is especially prevalent, those kind of disputes. And does that happen very much at the Racine Public Library? I mean, can you think of specific instances in which you have received complaints like that?
Yeah, I'm really glad you're asking this question. Frankly, no one should do an interview with a library employee at this point without talking about this. And again, just to sort of contextualize it really quickly, libraries right now are public libraries, but libraries of all kind are facing incredible challenges in the United States of America. And not just in the way, you know, you're talking about what we would call intellectual freedom challenges, right? Yeah. Censorship challenges, book challenge and ban issues. But not just in that space. There's a sort of plethora of challenges that public libraries are facing now that just weren't even a part of our jobs, weren't a part of the conversation in the field 3-5 years ago, even certainly pre-pandemic. The one that you're touching on is perhaps the biggest one. Something that you said about that book bans and challenges maybe are more prevalent in other spaces or in certain spaces in the country. One thing I would say to that is, no place is immune, and we're seeing that. Fortunately, the American Library Association, which is kind of like the national mothership for libraries, right? They've tracked book bans and challenges for years and years and years. And what we've seen over the last 4 to 5 years is exponential growth in book bans and challenges nationwide. Mm. We're seeing it in states that lean red. We're seeing it in states that lean blue. Wisconsin is in, definitely experiencing it. But to get to finally your question of how much has the Racine Public Library endured of that, I will say we have been, and this is a knock on wood thing, right? Again, no place is immune, but we have been very fortunate in not having to navigate these challenges at all to the degree that so many other libraries have. That's true about some of the other challenges that are really prevalent nationwide right now also. And the last thing I'll say about that is I think that some of the reason why that is because Racine has a community with community members that do value what libraries stand for and their core values. But also there's leadership in different spaces. I mean, even the library board, right? There's library boards throughout the country that some of their members are trying to actively ban books, which is antithetical to library values.
Right.
And fortunately, in a number of different leadership spaces, our library board and beyond, there are just people who believe that intellectual freedom and, you know, the right to read is a critical piece of democracy.
Hmm. Well put. Very well put. Let's finish out with something that was the very first thing that flashed up on the website when I visited it this morning, just wanting to make sure that there were certain aspects of this wonderful, complicated thing that we would miss. And right there was something called Pride 365 Reading Challenge.
Yeah.
What a neat idea. Tell our listeners about it. We don't have a whole lot of time, but...
Sure. I'll try to quickly say, you know, we and many other libraries for years have done a lot of things for Pride Month, which is the month of June, just to make sure that our community members who are LGBTQ+ understand that we are a library that serves the whole community, that recognizes and celebrates and accepts and welcomes every member of the community, and that sees our diversity as a strength and, you know, again, wants to amplify that and not shy away from that. And this year, some of our clever staff members just said, why do we only do this in June? And so a number of things we've tried to sort of take cultural celebration, make it more constant than just relegated to one month.
Like Black History Month or Women's History Month.
Absolutely. And so that's one of the ways. One of the other ways, I'll just say very quickly, we have the LGBT Center of Southeast Wisconsin coming and doing a number of programs, including safe zone trainings. And so if someone's interested in any of those, please check out our website for information on that.
Very good. There's so many things to be excited about when it comes to just libraries in general, and certainly the Racine Public Library in particular. And it's because of a lot of things, including a great community and great people working at the Racine Public Library. And one of them, Nick Dembski, for the how many years again? 17?
17 and a half now, yeah.
Wow. So you're an institution within an institution. Nick Dembski, it's been great to speak with you today on the morning show about so much going on at the Racine Public Library. And best wishes to you and to everybody there at the Racine Public Library.
Thanks so much for having me, Greg.
Monday on the morning show, Dr. Gerald Mast, professor of political science at Carthage College, offering his thoughts on this contentious presidential election underway and looking at it from a number of different angles, including the most recent debate and calls for perhaps President Biden to step aside, and the legal troubles of Donald Trump, among many other aspects that we touch on in a wide-ranging interview that we recorded yesterday, and we will be airing that Monday on The Morning Show. Our weather forecast calls for lots and lots of sunshine and heat. Today, not so bad. Today, sunny and a high of 83 degrees, overnight low of 66. Tomorrow, sunny and 87. Sunday, sunny and 93. Monday, sunny and 94. Monday is the first chance we have really any chance of rain. And then slightly milder temperatures. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. And